out to 5 months is me covering multiple chapters each week. So it'll be my goal to give you guys at least a study sheet ahead of time. That won't happen this week. Well, today it won't happen for next week, but you will have a study sheet probably by Thursday for Sunday's next meeting at 6 o'clock. That'll give you some things to read. You'll definitely want to read the portions of Jeremiah that we'll be looking at, but if you want to stay in the context, you're also going to want to read the background reading that I'll give you as well, which will set the stage for what Jeremiah was dealing with. And so we'll be looking at those excerpts, the different scriptures in Kings and Chronicles that detail this particular point in history that Jeremiah is living in, and gives you just the background detail of what Jeremiah is dealing with. So I'll try and have those things prepared for you each week ahead of time, so that you can read through the material and at least be able to go with it, go through the study with me, and be able to ask questions. And we'll have a, it'll just not be me talking all day like it will be tonight, because this is just the introduction and I'm going to tell you guys what it's all about. So our goal over these next 5 months, not 3 months, 5 months, this will probably go through the month of February, and depending on whether or not we have to miss any meetings, probably into the month of March of next year. So our goal is to examine the life and the times of Jeremiah as it's laid out in this book. And we'll be getting into a couple of things about that. We need to understand why this book was written, who it was written to, and who it was written for. We always know that we can glean some things for ourselves out of the Old Testament scriptures, but it's always a good idea to know why the material was written, who Jeremiah was writing to, and why he was writing what he wrote. We're going to study what's happening to the nation of Israel during the life of Jeremiah. And we're going to take a 747 view of that today, so you can kind of just get an overview of what Jeremiah is dealing with. So we're going to start with the chart that I sent you. If you got the email from Dean, there's a chart in there that Larry Haverstock was kind enough to give us when we were going through our chronological study of the Bible. And we used this chart many, many times when we were going through the prophets. And so this chart is probably, I've seen several of these, but this is probably one of the most compact and easy to understand charts that I've seen around. And so I'm just going to reuse it, steal it from him. And it gives us a good idea of not only who the kings were, of whether they were good or evil, but it also tells you what prophets were active during the time of those kings. And I think that's very useful for us, especially now. You can see that Jeremiah is down towards the bottom right-hand side of this chart. He's prophesying during the time of Josiah, of Jehoiakim, Jehoahaz, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. So he will span across five different kings over a 40 to 50-year span of his active life as a prophet. That number varies based on whether or not he was prophesying in Egypt when he was carried off, and for how long he lived, how long it was before he died. We don't know any of those things. We don't know when Jeremiah was born. We don't know when he died. We don't know how old he was. We can only glean those things from what he says in the first chapter, and we'll look at some of those things tonight. So the kings on this chart are color-coded to show good versus evil. So as you can see on Israel's side of the northern 10 tribes, there were no good kings. There were kings that were less evil and kings that were more evil. And there were plenty of prophets to tell them that things were not going to be good for them if they didn't change, but it did not change for them, and they went into Assyrian captivity around 722 BC. And that was during the reign of Hezekiah in Judah, who was a good king, who had immediately followed a horrible king that was Ahaz. And then the prophets are shown in blue right next to the timeline. So you know when the prophet was prophesying, because you can see the time scale on the side of the chart. And then you know during which king's reign that prophet was prophesying. And that lets you know who the prophet was talking to at the time and what they were having to deal with. Judah, as you look at the chart, had a lot more good kings, a lot more good times. Judah and the Israelites in that kingdom following God's word than Israel did. So the outline of our book is going to look something like this. So the prophecies of Jeremiah are not recorded in chronological order. There are large and small sections from different periods of his life that are randomly joined together in a record of Jeremiah's prophecies. There are parts of Jeremiah that are chronological, but as you'll see in one of the charts that I'll be showing you later on this evening, there are several parts and pieces that are later in the book, that are chronologically earlier in Jeremiah's life, and vice versa. So you can't just read through Jeremiah and think you're reading from when he started prophesying in 627 BC, and that those 40 or 50 years are laid out chronologically in the book, because that's not how the book has been put together. I'm sure that most of what he prophesied was recorded promptly, but when it was put together in several different time periods, it was not done so chronologically. And as spelled out in the outline in your introductory paper that you got, there's a pretty detailed outline in that three-page introductory paper. If you didn't get it, let Dean know and he'll make sure you get a copy of it. But as spelled out, we will be stepping through the book in chunks. So covering several chapters in some weeks, which will require you to read ahead, since we're not going to have the time to read the passages during class. There's just not enough time. If we were going to spend a year in Jeremiah, that might be possible. But if I'm going to finish this in the 4.5 to 5 months that I'm trying to do it, there's no way we're going to have to be able to read 2 to 3 chapters during our class period. So like I said, I'll be putting together study sheets for you that let you know what parts you need to read. Usually it's going to be between 2 and 3 chapters a week so that you know what we're studying and so that you're prepared to discuss that part of our study. So the chronology of Jeremiah, as I have mentioned, the chronology of Jeremiah is at most times confusing. It requires one to pay very strict attention to context and to rely heavily on the associated history that's given in the Book of Kings and the Chronicle of the Kings. And so I will try and do my best to give you the content out of Kings and Chronicles along with what you're reading in Jeremiah, so you have an idea of a better idea of the context that you're looking at. And then this chart may help. And if you want copies of this chart, I can include that in next week's. This is a chart that shows on it the chronology of Jeremiah and tries to put the chronology of the specific chapters and books as pertains to the king that Jeremiah was dealing with. So you can see, like under Josiah, chapter 1, chapters 2 through 6, 7 through 10, 11, 1 through 8, 11, 9 through 13, 17, and 14 through 20. Well, that looks like it's pretty chronological. But then when you get down to Jehoiakim, it's 608 is chapter 22, 1 through 19, and chapter 26. And then 604, remember, BC is counting down, so our years are getting closer and closer to zero. 604 jumps over to chapter 36, verses 1 through 8. And then it also includes parts of chapter 25 and chapters 46 through 51, chapter 45, and chapter 36, verses 9 through 22. So as you can see, just in the transition from Josiah to Jehoiakim, we have a whole bunch of jumping around in the text of the book of Jeremiah that is not chronologically ordered. Jehoiachin, you can take a look at that. He's chapter 22, verses 20 through 30. And that's the years 598 to 597. If you look up at Jehoiakim, that's chapter 22, verses 1 through 19. And that's in 608. So just in one chapter, we're jumping almost 10 years. So you can see that it's really easy to get muddled and lost in Jeremiah, because you think you're reading about one specific contextual moment in time, and you're not. It's that things have been put together in different ways, and mostly contextually, dealing with specific topics rather than dealing with specific time periods. And so it's really easy to get lost, and I'll do my best to try and keep us on target and on track. But as you can see, Jeremiah is a difficult book to stay on target with that, because as we're going to go through it, we're going to go through it by chapter. We're not really going to be going through it in a chronological study, because some of the chronology in Jeremiah is up to interpretation. And there are multiple different people that say multiple different things about specific things that Jeremiah talks about and what those were referencing. And so it's really easy to pull, even in context, some things and think that they're pertaining to one time period when they're really pertaining to another. So we're just going to take it in chunks of chapters together, and I'll try and point out what I think they may be applying to as specific time periods and such. So who was Jeremiah? So if we look at Jeremiah's name, it means Yahweh will raise. And Jeremiah was raised up by God, as we'll read in the first chapter. This is the only week we're going to be reading the book in class, and we'll read the first chapter because it's pretty short and it'll give us a nice introduction into who Jeremiah was and his calling and what he was about. So his name means Yahweh will raise. He was the son of Hilkiah. We read that in chapter 1 and verse 1. And most likely, this is Hilkiah the high priest during the reign of Josiah, who we read about in 2 Kings chapter 22, verse 4 and verses 8 through 14. And Hilkiah the high priest found the book of the law of the Lord and had it delivered to King Josiah. It was read to King Josiah. Josiah rent his garments, understanding that Judah and Israel both had violated their covenant with God in a way that they were not going to come back from. But Josiah made it his mission to do what he could to steer the people back towards God. And Jeremiah is at this time being called up by God to try and steer Judah back towards righteousness. What this leads us to understand is that Hilkiah was righteous. He was the high priest, and he was a man who was following God, but he was also a godly example of a parent, which helps us understand how it's not a huge leap that Jeremiah understood that who God was and that the land around him was evil and not following God's word. And helps us understand where Jeremiah is coming from, that he is doing his very best to lead the people back to God. One other thing this lets us know is since his father was a high priest, that Jeremiah was a Levite. So he was of that tribe, which means that he wasn't of a specific land tribe. So the area where he was living was an area of land that was dedicated to the Levites. And he lived with his family in Anathoth. So his home was that village. The village of Anathoth is about 3 miles north-northeast of Jerusalem. It was a Levitical city. You can read about that in Joshua chapter 21 and verse 18. And we did read about that just recently in Ron's class. Actually, we never got this far. Did we make it through chapter 21? I don't think we did. I think COVID hit before we got that far. So we would have read about this city in Joshua with our study with Bob, but we just never made it that far that I'm aware of. So Jeremiah prophesied during the reigns of at least 5 kings of Judah and beyond the beginning of their Babylonian captivity. He saw the destruction of Jerusalem firsthand in 586 BC. And we know he prophesied for at least the 40 years from 627 to 586, and maybe even as long as 50 years when you include his journey to Egypt later in life. And looking at who Jeremiah was, he was commanded not to marry and not to have children as an example of the devastation that Jerusalem was going to suffer. And we'll read about that in chapter 16, verses 2 and 3. So Jeremiah was on his own with this. He didn't have a wife. He didn't have children. And so it's a little bit easier to understand why he was the weeping prophet. We see a lot more emotion from him, and we also understand that he didn't have a physical shoulder to lean on. He was by himself. He didn't have a wife to console him. He didn't have children who would carry on his message. He was by himself. And so you can read in the book at times where Jeremiah gets kind of low, and you can understand why he was that way, because of the commandment God gave him that he needed to be separate. He was faithful to God as a prophet, but he suffered greatly in the process. Throughout the book of Jeremiah, we're going to look at the trials he endured, including being lowered into a pit of mire in chapter 38, and threats against his life in chapter 11, and there are other things we can look at as well, and we'll look at as we go through. He greatly lamented over Judah's choice to reject God, knowing what was coming for Judah, knowing that even as he started to prophesy, God had already made up his mind that there was nothing that was going to save Judah. His contemporaries were the prophets Zephaniah, Nahum, Habakkuk, and towards the end of his life, Daniel and Ezekiel, who were most likely younger than Jeremiah, but started to prophesy while in captivity. But those were the contemporary prophets of that time. And finally, when we talk about Jeremiah, tradition says Jeremiah died in Egypt, being carried against his will into Egypt, as recorded in the latter part of the book in chapter 43. But we don't know, again, how long he lived, where he died, if he made it back to Judea and was part of the remnant. I couldn't tell you. I can't answer that question. I don't know. God didn't tell us. And so it's like I said, from the study I put in there, tradition tells us that he died in Egypt, but couldn't tell you if that's the case or not. So Jeremiah's character, as I called him before, he's the weeping prophet, and he is named so because of his sympathy towards his people and their choices. Jeremiah knew what was going to befall Judah, knew what was coming for them, did his best to steer the Israelites towards righteousness, but knew that God's mind had been made up after the reign of Manasseh. Once Manasseh turned the land so evil, sacrificing children and those kind of things, there was nothing that was going to change God's mind about what was going to happen to Judah. And we'll see that in a little bit later in this study tonight, how specific God was about that. He was a perseverant and a patient man in spite of a rebellious people who hated him for telling them the truth. The people in Judah despised Jeremiah, treated him poorly, and wanted nothing to do with him. Even though he was the mouthpiece of God, God specifically tells us in the first chapter that he was going to put his words in Jeremiah's mouth. And he did so. And as we discussed earlier, it was obvious that he got discouraged at times. Jeremiah's character shows us that he was a man of righteousness, and it was taxing on him to see the people around him going downhill so quickly, knowing that their demise was going to soon happen, knowing how it was going to happen, and knowing what was going to befall the Israelites, knowing they were going to be in captivity for 70 years, but nothing that he could do about it except do his very best to show God in the way he lived his life. So a little bit of background of the book. As Jeremiah begins to prophesy, northern Israel has been in Assyrian captivity for about 100 years. They were carried off in captivity in 722, so Jeremiah starts prophesying in 627. That's roughly like 94 years. So the Judeans have seen, the Israelites in Judah have seen the northern 10 tribes carried away in captivity, never to return. And a lot of the northern 10 tribes never did return. They blended in with the Assyrians who were conquered by the Babylonians, who were conquered by the Medes and Persians, and became lost. So Judah has grown more corrupt, and their doom has been sealed as a result of the sins of Manasseh, and that was Josiah's father. You can read about that in 2 Kings verse 20, or chapter 21, verses 10 through 16, and Jeremiah chapter 15, verses 3 and 4. So, again, earlier I showed you this chart, and what I wanted you to see was when you look at Israel versus Judah, they look, you can see the difference in good versus evil. It looks like Judah had a lot more goodness, but if you look at Judah at the end of the time that they have, that we'll be looking at this chart, when Jeremiah begins to prophesy during the reign of Josiah, that's Judah's last righteous king. And he starts prophesying during the 13th year of his reign. So his message is received too little, too late. So if we look at this chart and we compare the right to the Assyrian captivity, we can see that Judah looks much better. But then if we put the last part of Judah after King Hezekiah, look at that. The only righteous king was Josiah. Manasseh did the damage to Judah that was unretrievable. God had made up his mind that there was no way for Judah to be saved, that they were going to go into captivity. And it was because of the reign of Manasseh that that happened. Josiah turning the people back to God delayed that. I don't know this for sure, but I can almost guarantee that if Josiah had not been a good king, that Southern Two Tribes probably would have gone into captivity even earlier. But you can see the difference in Judah from the start of the divided kingdom to when Jeremiah started prophesying. They became more evil. And it's because of that that their fate was sealed. So what is the message of the book of Jeremiah? Well, again, it's not in chronological order, so the message is more contextual and topical than it is chronological. And the overall message is to Judah and Jerusalem to prepare for captivity because of their sin. There is no turning back. There is nothing that could be done by any kings that came after Manasseh that would change God's mind. And if you look at chapter 15 and verse 1, I wanted to read that real quick just to reinforce this. Even Moses and Samuel would not be able to change God's mind. In Jeremiah chapter 15 and verse 1, then the Lord said to me, even though Moses and Samuel were to stand before me, my heart would not be with this people. Send them away from my presence and let them go. That tells you a lot about where God was at this point in time. There was nothing that was going to change God's mind. God spoke directly to Moses. Samuel was a man, the last judge, who tried to lead the people into righteousness. And even those two people, if they had been there, could not have changed God's mind about what was going to happen to Judah because of what had come, because of the evil that had befallen the land. And then the latter part of the book of Jeremiah is also a warning to all nations of God's judgment. God talks specifically and gives Jeremiah specific information about what's going to befall specific nations besides Israel, and that there would be evil that would befall them as well. And as with most of the prophets, we find glimpses of the Messiah throughout this book, and we'll point those out as we go through them. But we see that in almost all of the other prophets, references to the Messiah that was to come. So that sets up the background for Jeremiah, for what was going on at the time, for when it was occurring. And so for the rest of the evening, we have about 25 minutes. We're going to look at Jeremiah chapter 1. And like I said, we're going to read through that. And it's a relatively short chapter. I've got it in four sections. So if you're willing to read for me, I would love to have somebody else read besides me, because I'm doing all the talking right now. So I'll start by saying Jeremiah chapter 1, as an exception to the rule for this class, we're going to read this first chapter, and we're going to start with the introduction, which is verses 1 through 3. So can I get somebody to read verses 1 through 3 for me?
I'll read it, Ted.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready for me to start now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The words of Jeremiah, son of Hilkiah, one of the priests of Anatoth in the territory of Benjamin. The word of the Lord came to him in the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, son of Ammon, king of Judah, and through the reign of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah, down to the 5th month of the 11th year of Zedekiah, son of Joash, king of Judah, when the people of Jerusalem went into exile.
Okay, so that gives us a really good background of what we're dealing with here. It tells us who Jeremiah was, who his father was, where he lived, the tribe he was living in, the tribal area. He was in the land of Benjamin, in the city that I pointed out to you was about 3 miles northeast of Jerusalem. And it tells us the kings that he prophesied through the kingships that he prophesied through. We see that Josiah, Jeremiah started prophesying the 13th year of Josiah's reign. And he also prophesied during Jehoiakim. And there was a small Jehoiachin reign there, a very short one. And then all the way through the 11th year of Zedekiah, and up until the point where the Israelites were led off into captivity by the Babylonians. The next part we're going to read is Jeremiah's call. That's verses 4 through 10. Can I get a volunteer for that?
Okay, I'll pick that up.
Okay.
Now the word of the Lord came to me saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I have appointed you a prophet to the nations. Then I said, alas, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak because I am a youth. But the Lord said to me, do not say I am a youth, because everywhere I send you, you shall go, and all that I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. Then the Lord stretched out his hand and touched my mouth, and the Lord said to me, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have appointed you this day over the nations and over the kingdoms to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant.
All right. Thank you, Lenny. So this is Jeremiah's call. This is the Lord calling Jeremiah to be a prophet for him. And one of the things you may notice here is, when did the Lord call him? What does verse 5 tell us?
Before he was born.
Before he was born. We see the Lord working the way the Lord always works, outside of time. Doesn't matter that Jeremiah wasn't born yet. It doesn't matter that he wasn't conceived, but that the Lord knew that he would be there, and the Lord knew what kind of man he would be. We also see that Jeremiah calls himself a youth. Don't know how old that is. Don't know if a youth meant he was a teenager or if a youth meant he was under the age of 30. So that there is another part of this that makes it really hard to date some of these things, because you just don't know how old he was here. And when you look at some of the different dates that we are given, times that are spelled out in Jeremiah as we go through, it's really difficult to make things jive. What I've seen from some of the commentaries is that one of the assumptions made is he was somewhere in his late teens, early 20s, somewhere around 17 to 21, somewhere in there. And what that helps you do is date the different things that were happening when we do get dates throughout the rest of the book of Jeremiah. But again, we don't know how old he was, just that he was what he considered to himself a youth. All right. The next reading will be verses 11 and 12. This is the vision of the almond tree.
I'll do it.
Somebody read. Go ahead.
Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Jeremiah, what do you see? And I said, I see a branch of an almond tree. Then the Lord said to me, you have seen well, for I am ready to perform my word. And the word of the Lord came to me the second time, saying, what do you see? And I said, I see a boiling pot, and it is facing away from the north. Whoops.
That's okay. Well, since you're going, why don't you finish through verse 19? You're okay.
I got carried away. Okay.
Go to 19.
It is facing away from the north. Then the Lord said to me, out of the north, calamity shall break forth, on all the inhabitants of the land. For behold, I am calling all the families of the kingdoms of the north, says the Lord. They shall come, and each one set his throne at the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem, against all its walls all around, and against all the cities of Judah. Okay. I will utter my judgments against them concerning all their wickedness, because they have forsaken me, burned incense to other gods, and worshiped the works of their own hands.
19.
Therefore, prepare yourself and arise, and speak to them all that I command you. Do not be dismayed before their faces, lest I dismay you before them.
19.
For behold, I have made you this day a fortified city and an iron pillar and bronze walls against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, against its princes, against its priests, and against the land and against the people of the land. They will fight against you, but they shall not prevail against you. For I am with you, says the Lord, to deliver you.
All right. So starting back in verse 11, Jeremiah had a vision, and he said, the Lord asked him what he saw, and he said, I see a rod of an almond tree. And the Lord tells him what that means. He said, you have seen well, for I am watching over my word to perform it. So God tells him that these things that are about to be, these things are about to come, are God telling Jeremiah what is going to happen. These things are planned. God has put them in motion, and that his word will not be denied. God is letting Jeremiah know that these things that I'm going to tell you that are to come will come to pass. You don't have to worry about that. You don't have to wonder if it's going to happen, because I am going to make it so. He goes on further to tell him in verse 13, says a second time, what do you see? And Jeremiah says, I see a boiling pot facing away from the north. And then the Lord tells him what that means as well. He says, out of the north, evil will break forth on all the inhabitants of the land. For behold, I am calling all the families of the kingdoms of the north, declares the Lord, and they will come and they will set each one his throne at the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem and against all its walls around about and against all the cities of Judah. So what does that tell you about what is coming?
Germany.
Calamity? Is that what I heard?
Yes.
Calamity, for sure. If we were told that there was going to be a boiling pot from the east coming in that's going to destroy all of our cities, that's going to destroy everything, and that it's going to break down the walls of the White House, what would that tell us?
How about judgment also?
That would be, yes, it would be judgment. That would tell us it would be the end of our nation as we know it. The way our nation is currently structured would no longer exist. To put it in terms that we would understand, when this vision specifically talks about the gates of Jerusalem and having armies surrounding Jerusalem, and destroying all of the cities of Judah, that gives us a good idea of what Jeremiah is seeing here and understanding, is that the southern two tribes are going to go the way of the northern 10 tribes. That is, there will be nothing left.
And God also tells them here that this is going to be the end of what they know, but it's going to be his judgment, and he's going to use other agents to exact his judgment on them because of their sin. And yeah, and that has to be harsh news.
Well, not only that, but what we're going to learn is that these are going to be the last five kings of Israel. There will never again be a king in Israel besides God.
Right.
Because after, even after the 70 years in Babylonian captivity, there is never again another Israeli king, a king over Israel. Never happens again. So Zedekiah will be the last king that ever sits on a throne in Israel by God's design. So after looking at the first chapter, I put together some questions I wanted to ask you. And these are relatively, I think, obvious, but just to get a discussion going. So the first question here is, during the reigns of which kings did Jeremiah prophesy? And if you look at verse 3, it tells you all of them.
Jehoiakim, Josiah, Zedekiah.
Yep. I hear you, somebody rattling them off. So it's during the King Josiah. It starts in the 13th year of Josiah's reign. Jehoiakim and Zedekiah are the three mentioned in verse 3. Mm-hmm. There are two other kings that he prophesies through their reigns as well, but their reigns are so short that they're not even mentioned. I think Jehoiachin's reign is like 2 months or even less. I can't remember. But so short that they really weren't even kingships. But Josiah was a king for a good long time. And again, also Jehoiakim and Zedekiah had relatively long kingships compared to some of the other kings who only ruled for 2 years or less. So we see Jeremiah, his activity spans the last few kings of Judah. And his message does not change. He tells all of these kings, one after another, that calamity is going to befall Judah and Jerusalem, and that there is nothing that they can do to stop it, but that they should pray for God's mercy, and that they should try and live righteous lives, because that would please God, and maybe, just maybe, he would go easier on them. But as we read, God was not going to change his mind about sending Judah into captivity, period, the end. That was not going to happen. So,
I had a question.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is a prophecy directed really to the nation, that God is going to bring the nation to an end? He's not going to bring every individual to an end. The individual might return to God, but the nation as a whole has gone so far that God will not save the nation.
Correct. And I think that's, if I haven't made that clear, by ending the kingships, by ending Israel or Judah as a nation, an independent nation, I think God's message to Jeremiah here was that this is going to fundamentally change how you live your lives in the land that I gave you. Because we're going to see that Israel is never again independent. They're always going to be under the thumb of the ruling nation at that time. They'll never again have their own nation that is independent from another nation. Once Judah goes into captivity, even the remnant that's left are under the thumb of the current power in the world at that time, whether that be Egypt or Babylonia or the Medes and Persians, or down to the year zero, where it's the Greeks and the Romans. Never again will Israel be its own independent nation. So the next question I had was, when was Jeremiah ordained a prophet? And we covered this pretty well. And we talked about this. It was before he was conceived and born. God tells him in verse 5, I formed you. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I set you apart. I have appointed you a prophet to the nations. That last part is something I want to hit on. Who is Jeremiah prophesying to? Was he just a prophet to the Israelites?
To all the nations.
All the nations. This, what the Lord was doing to Israel was not just a sign to Israel. This was a sign to every nation around Israel. God is in control. And if God is willing to do this to his own people when they fall out of righteousness, what is God willing to do to those other nations if they are not righteous to him? If they are not following what they know to be true and right in God's eyes? And God has some very chilling prophecies to give many of the surrounding nations through the mouth of Jeremiah in the middle and the end of the book of Jeremiah. And we'll be studying those several in a few months. But when you look at Jeremiah, people think, well, he was prophesying to Israel, and he was. But he was also prophesying to all of the surrounding nations as well. Israel was to be a beacon of what to do and what not to do. And as the nation came to a close, they were a beacon of what not to do where God is concerned. What had the Lord set Jeremiah to do over the nations? If we look at verse 10.
He started out to say to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow. And then he concludes to build and to plant.
There we go. So this would include nations. I would say this would also include Israel. But God was going to destroy them. And he tells the specific nations that he was going to destroy them. So that means you're going to be uprooted from where you live. Your walls are going to be broken down. You're going to have your cities destroyed, your capitals overthrown. But in the end, you will be able to build and plant again. You will be able to raise a nation in its place as long as you are righteous with God. And that's what we see happens after the 70-year captivity. We see God raises up a ruler who lets the Israelites go, gives them the choice to go. Not only that, sends them on their way back to the promised land with money and with food, with cattle, lets them take what they have. God raised up that ruler as well so that the remnant would not be destroyed, so that the kingdom of Israel would remain. They would never be the power structure that they would before, that they were in David's time and Solomon's time. They would never be that powerful again, but they would be a nation. They would just always be ruled by other nations. So from where would calamity befall the land in verse 14?
From the north.
Out of the north. There are, from the study that I've done, there are several different ideas about who the North encompasses, and we'll get into that as we go. There, of course, Babylon is the primary choice and is the nation who conquers Judah and destroys the walls of Jerusalem and the walls of the temple. Nebuchadnezzar takes care of all of that. But there are some other things that happen earlier before Judah completely falls that are pointed towards other tribes, other nations in the north. And we'll look at those as we get into them. But that this would be a nation that God raises out of the north and who God invites in to destroy Judah, to destroy Jerusalem, and to destroy the temple. The last question I had for you tonight is, what had the Lord made Jeremiah like in verses 18 and 19? Jeremiah considered himself a youth. He was worried about being able to stand against a wave of unrighteousness that was coming at him. What did God say he would make Jeremiah like?
Like a fortress.
A fortified city. Cool. A pillar of iron. Walls of bronze. All insurmountable obstacles. Things that could stand up to what Jeremiah was going to be confronting. Because just against his own people, he was hated because of what he was prophesying. That's to say nothing of the torture, the things that would befall him from other nations. As we talked about earlier, he gets hauled off into Egypt. He is in Jerusalem or in Judah when the Babylonians take it. When they destroy Jerusalem, he's there to witness it. And so it helps us to understand that not only was Jeremiah suffering at the hands of the evil Israelites living in Judah, but he was suffering at the hands of other nations, of Gentiles. And the Lord tells him that he's going to build them up. He will be a fortified city, a pillar of iron, and like walls of bronze, he would be able to withstand them. God would give him the strength. That's all I have for tonight, and we're butting up against 7 o'clock, so that's just about perfect. That's what I wanted to cover. Like I said, I will have your reading for next week spelled out for you. If you look at your syllabus, if you got a copy of it, you can look at week 2, and that'll tell you what to read, at least for the books in the book of Jeremiah, the chapters in Jeremiah that I want to cover next week. That'll let you know what to read there. And then when I send you the study sheet, it'll also have some ancillary reading for you to prepare for the context we'll be looking at out of Kings and Chronicles, so that you have just a little bit more to fall back on. So we'll have a little more discussion. But like I said, this class is going to be mostly reliant on you guys doing the reading beforehand, because we're not going to have time to read during class, because we'll be covering a lot more in the future classes than we did tonight. We'll be covering, like I said, large chunks of chapters in Jeremiah in order to maintain this schedule in the amount of time I'm trying to finish it in. Were there any other observations or questions about what we looked at tonight?
Good job, Ted.
Thank you. I hope it was beneficial to everybody. I want to make sure that this class is something we can learn from. And as we go into it, I plan to also have not just the history and not just the prophecy, but a takeaway each week about what we can learn from what we've studied. And knowing that Jeremiah was spoken to the people at that time for a specific reason, but that there are things that we can take out of it and apply to our everyday lives, that there are things we can learn from Jeremiah. And I think as we look around us and we see our nation degrading slowly but surely, we can take comfort knowing that even though this happened to God's people, God is in control. God will not let anything happen to us that he does not want to happen to us. And God is righteous. And if we strive for righteousness, God will remember us. So it's important for us to try and take that out of this. I don't want to put us into this context. That's not what this is about. It's just us learning from history that God is in control.
Yeah, thanks, Ted. You did a great job of setting the stage. I'm really excited about this study.
Great. I hope all of us can learn from it. I know just preparing for tonight, I learned a whole lot about Jeremiah that I didn't know just by reading through it. So I hope each week is like this, and I'll try and make it as interactive as possible. I don't want to just be teaching at you over a camera. I would like us to have some back and forth. So expect for there to be more questions and for there to be a lot of dead silence if you don't answer them.
Thank you, Ted.